Welcome back, everybody. And as we like to do, we encourage you to check us out on where, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook, like us, please. The cool part about TheValleyOutdoors.com is we've got some great info on there. If you're looking for anything that's going on in the state that you may be traveling to, licenses, limits, whatever, it'll link you right over there. Just go to the website, TheValleyOutdoors.com, and you will find it. It's that simple.
It is.
Well as past shows.
There's a lot on there.
Yeah. You can go pull up any of the past shows that we have done and binge listen, kind of like you do with a good Netflix.
We're better than that. We're radio. Right? Yeah.
Apparently you haven't watched The Lincoln Lawyer. I can't compete with The Lincoln Lawyer.
I have not.
No. Okay.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a good show. I finally I binge watched to catch up, so I have to make sure I'm caught up for the new season coming. But anyway,
gotcha.
Yeah. So a story coming out of Voyager National Park. When I was a kid, 15, I actually worked up there as a dock boy for a season. I've been going up there for many years with my mom and dad fishing up there, and. Very unfortunate story. A park ranger had drowned during a rescue. The National Park Service reported Sunday that a law enforcement park ranger at Voyager National Park died while responding to a call for assistance on Namekin Lake. So if you're familiar with Kabatogama, that's the farthest west lake within the Voyager National Park. Then it goes to Namekin. Then it goes into Rainy, which wraps around up over the top and moves into Canada. And because it's an east-west facing lake, the waves on Namekin as well as Cab can get quite large if you do have a west wind, and I believe that was part of what was going on. The National Park Service identified the fallen ranger as Kevin Grossheim, 55, of Kabatogama. He was described as a dedicated law enforcement officer, emergency services volunteer, member of the community, and beloved husband and friend. Kevin was much loved by all and always known to go above and beyond. He'll be greatly missed. And hearts go out to his wife and loved ones. The story goes, Ranger Grossman responded Sunday morning to a distress call from park visitors near Birch Cove Island on Namekin after taking a family of three aboard his National Park Service boat. Now, these boats are not little. They're about 24 feet long. They're a bigger boat. So it's not like a small boat. Took the three people on board. The vessel overturned. And amid high winds and rough waters, three of the family members were able to reach safety. Grossman was unaccounted for, and his body was recovered later that afternoon following a three-hour-long search. Participating in the search recovery were the U.S. Border Patrol, St. Louis County Sheriff's, and the Kabatogama Fire Department. Yeah, very sad deal. He was a seasonal ranger at Boston National Historic Park in 1993 and started his career there, and also was part of the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore Park Service there, and his 23-year tenure as commissioned enforcement park ranger at Voyagers at the time of his passing, unfortunately. So hearts out to the family there. Sad story.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? You know? I guess the point is wear your life jacket at all times if you're in a situation where the conditions are strenuous, to say the least, or tenuous, if you want to go that way with it. So,
just always best to wear one.
Yeah. When it's,
you never know.
When it's those kind of conditions. I'm surprised was not wearing one. And this, then it comes to me, did they always wear flotation, the suspenders? And it comes back to me wondering if maybe it didn't inflate, because I believe they're all required to wear them in the boats. So this exact thing does not happen. So jumping into the farm bill. Stakes are high for hunters and anglers. This is out of the Theodore Roosevelt conservation partnerships and commentary. Bigger investments don't happen other than the federal farm bill for conservation, total about $6 billion per year. It's the single largest investment in conservation that the federal government makes on an annual basis. Every 5 years, Congress drafts a new farm bill in a massive piece of legislation that supports agricultural producers and ensures hungry families have food on the table. Tucked inside the legislation are crucial conservation programs that incentivize habitat creation, sustainable agriculture, and even access to private land for hunting and fishing. The reauthorization of the improvement of these programs is a top priority, not just within the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, but with all elements in agriculture, agricultural and nutrition communities. The Farm Bill expired September 30th, 2023, and eventually was extended until September 30th, 2024. A lot of activity recently going on, and this is one of the things that comes into politics, Ava. It's a challenge, shall we say, to get sides to agree. Reauthorizing and updating the Farm Bill programs is always important, but for hunters and anglers and really anyone who cares about sustainable food system, it's a major incentive to pass that bill now. The whole thing really comes down to, it's not new that you have to keep going through this same thing. It's daunting, and as I was looking through this article earlier, there's been a couple years that they had to argue back and forth, or what do you call it? I forget the political term, but having discussion on what should or should not be. But the Farm Bill in 2011, conversation started and didn't get signed till 2014. And it should have been authorized, reauthorized in 2012, but multiple years in that situation. So a lot of things that they have to fight through. In addition to providing supplemental funding, even if new farm bill or an extension isn't passed, many practices that benefit hunters and anglers will continue through the Environmental Quality Incentive Program, Conservation Stewardship Program. I can say that three times. Stewardship Program, Regional Conservation Program, and Agricultural Conservation Easement Programs. So there's a ton of programs that will help keep programs going, but next couple of months are going to be crucial. And, of course, passing the Farm Bill, it's going to be crucial. I don't think it's going to happen quickly, as some of my friends have talked about within the outdoor news aspect, talking with them. Yeah, it's going to be one of those things. In the face of gridlock, conservation is and should be shared priority, regardless of party affiliation or ideology. Congress needs to hear this is important to you. So please feel free, write your congressman and let them know to get this thing passed. It's going to be impacting wildlife and access, as well as other key pieces of legislation that affect the outdoors. So important. So there you go. I was surprised. This is a story for the guys in Michigan. There's 2,000 dead deer were just reported within a very short period of time. And it's from epizootic hemorrhagic disease. And really what it is, it's a bad outbreak that's happening right now and killing healthy whitetails just out of the blue. One of the comments, he's never seen anything like it. And a gentleman hunts in Berrien, Van Buren, and Cass counties in Michigan. And in just about every waterway, you can smell death, he said. The deer that you've watched on camera for 3 or 4 years, they're gone just like that. It's hard to even fathom. The EHD will continue to spread, and the outbreak won't end until a hard frost kills the midges, bugs, that transmit the often fatal whitetail disease. We have positive results in 11 counties, said the DNR wildlife supervisor in the Plainwell office. That would be Mark Mills. He said, we've only tested 18 deer because we're not sending deer in once we get a positive in a county. We're still asking people to report dead deer through Eyes in the Field app. So if you don't have that app, you can get that. But as of early October, about 2,000 deer have been reported through the online app, and the DNR has confirmed EHD in the wild deer population in both Berrien Branch, Calhoun, Cass, Hillsdale, Kalamazoo, Kent, Ottawa, St. Joseph, and Van Buren counties, all of which are in the southwest corner of the Lower Peninsula. Deer infected through a bite of a fly or midge, that can be a black fly or no-see-um, that's how they are infected. A deer must be bitten by a midge carrying the virus to become infected. Not all deer bitten by the midge become infected, and not all deer infected with the disease die from it. EHD is not transmitted directly from one deer to another, which is a bonus, unlike chronic wasting. So that's a whole different deal. DNR says EHD poses no threat to humans and no evidence that humans can contract the virus. How bad is the outbreak, you ask, Ava? I heard you ask that question, right?
I was going to.
Yeah, I knew you were. The second worst in the past two decades after the 2012 outbreak. The 2012 outbreak estimated the death of 15,000 whitetail over 30 counties in southern Michigan. Prior to this year, the next worst outbreak was 2010, where upwards of 1,000 deer died, and followed by 400 deer lost in 08.
And how much was it this year? It was
2,000 so far, but you need a hard frost to get rid of it. It's not expected to have widespread deer population impacts, but can significantly affect localized deer populations. What leads to the outbreak? This is kind of the other thought-provoking thing. It's a viral disease that affects ruminants, including whitetail, mule deer, and elk. Outbreaks of the disease typically occur late summer and early fall. The midges need mud to lay their eggs, so it's often found near water. And shows that three things that drive EHD: a warm spring, a lot of precipitation in July, and a hot, dry August.
Well,
how do you do? They said it's unusual that in a very localized, according to biologists, it can create a pretty drastic outbreak in one area, but deer just a couple miles away are not infected.
That's so weird.
Is that not crazy?
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
It is a good thing.
Have a problem with that. So most of the deer, you say, they die from, they're relatively healthy. Signs of EHD are variable, ranging from none, not a thing, to extensive internal bleeding and fluid accumulation. Hmm. So they look bloated. Infected deer appear lethargic. They lose fear of humans. Salivate excessively, that would be drooling, and have fever and excessive thirst. That sounds like me. Never mind.
That's a good question to ask, though. Like, does it normally affect older deer? You know, but doesn't matter.
Does not matter. What happens is they'll go in the water to cool off, and that's why EHD infected deer are found in the and around the water. Illness can come on suddenly and severely, often killing an infected deer within days. That's the craziest part about it. It can also linger for weeks or months in a low-grade state. Deer that survive EHD can develop an immunity. Infected deer that survive often have broken or brittle hoofs. There is no known treatment for EHD in wild populations. The disease has been seen for decades, shown up annually in Michigan since 06. Any deer seeing, if you see one in the field, it should be reported to the Eyes in the Field app and or call the closest DNR customer service center. So, yeah. That's
another thing to look out for.
Yeah, sad, sad, sad. Hey, let's get into something that's not so sad.
Okay. End on a high note?
Yeah, smoking a wild game for mouth-watering flavor.
Awesome.
Yeah, it kind of my gig. I love that. It does, I mean, whether you're doing hamburgers, whether you're doing salmon, which I do a ton of, or you do beef brisket, wildlife, you know, wild game has a tendency to be a little drier. And mm-hmm. So the big thing here is, how do you best make that happen to keep them moist and tasty? And I'm just going to go through a couple of these key things. But one of the big ones for me, venison jerky. Good jerky should tear and be slightly chewy but not tough. Smoked jerky adds to flavor and helps dry the meat out. Once it's smoked and dried, should last for a long time. So what I'm going to do eventually, we'll have this on the website. So venison jerky will be up there. But 2 pounds of roast, 1/4 cup soy sauce, 1/4 cup of Worcestershire, onion powder, 1 teaspoon, teaspoon of garlic, 2 tablespoons maple sugar. And this is the one that I find difficult. Do you know where you find juniper berries?
No.
On a juniper.
Okay. Well, where do you find a juniper?
I have one in my yard.
Really?
Yeah. Juniper. Huh. You only need, 10 juniper berries specifically. Not too big, not too small. A terrorist effect would be awfully nice. Bad Monty Python joke, but I'll just leave it at that those of you who get it. Slice of venison 1/4 inch thick, marinate together, toss in the meat. Let it sit in the fridge overnight. This is a crucial piece to this. You need to make sure that you do let it sit in the fridge. It's a wet brine. Soak in the fridge. Do not be afraid to go. Even if you want to go 24 hours, that's fine too. It's going to help the meat stay tender. Just keep that in mind. So that's one part. But here's the part that I liked. Use the same method brining for upland and waterfowl. Difference between the two is cooking and temperature. Waterfowl, you can get away with cooking to 140 to 150 degrees. Upland birds, you want to go to 165. The brine will help the birds keep them nice and moist and add flavor. I like to use maple sugar in most of the brines, but any type of sugar would be substituted. So I'll use maple sugar or brown sugar. And then what I would do is also look at basting it with a maple syrup. That also helps a lot and keeps in the moisture once they get initial smoke, which is a key piece to this. And secondary piece, if you get a secondary smoke tube, add your pellets to that, light the pellets, put it in if you really like to have that additional smoked flavor. And adding water, it's a big piece to it as well. So kosher salt, that's going to bring out some of the fat. Garlic, I love that. The whole head of garlic, mash that
up.
Dude,
you can never go wrong.
No, you can never go wrong. And speaking of pretty cool, it's amazing how this show
just goes quickly.
Wraps up in nothing flat. Have yourself a great weekend, and we will talk with you again next week. For the Valley Outdoors, I'm Eric Ferreira. We are out.